You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. As we speak, the president is holding a press conference. I doubt he's going to hit the four-hour mark like Vladimir Putin did earlier today in his press conference, which is something of, you know, kind of Guinness Book of World Records. But it's kind of cool. And, you know, a lot going on in the news. Senator Sanders, it's Friday, so Bernie Sanders will be with us. He's, however, in an airplane right now on his way back up to Burlington. And so he's going to join us in the third hour of our program instead of the first hour of our program. So those of you who normally call in to talk with Bernie during the first hour, just stick around for another 2 hours, roughly, a little less than. And Bernie will be with us for the full third hour of our program. Meanwhile, a county government building has given permission to the Ku Klux Klan of Maryland, of the state of Maryland, the Confederate White Knights of Maryland, to use the Elk Room in the Cecil County Government Building today, December 20th, today is the 20th, yeah, today, to plot the impeachment of President Obama. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. Let's ask the Imperial Wizard of the Grand Knights of the Ku Klux Klan of the state of Maryland, Richard Preston, Imperial Wizard Preston, what's the deal? Richard Preston, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
Good. Thank you for joining us. So,
you're very welcome.
So,
thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So you are, the Ku Klux Klan wants to impeach President Obama. Why?
Well, for one thing, you know, I have talked to many a different person of different ethnic backgrounds throughout Maryland, Pennsylvania areas. And every person I seem to talk to is on the same belief, whether they are conservative, and very well, a lot of people that are liberals are just disgusted with the way our government has been going. President Barack Hussein Obama is pretty much an illegal president. He has held dual citizenship. He was an Indonesian citizen before an American citizen. His parents were not both American born and raised. He went to Columbia University on foreign exchange student loans while being an Indonesian citizen. He has no right in the presidential seat. He has been calling a lot of shots for America that has put us in a hole so deep that our great-great-great-grandkids aren't going to be able to dig their way out of it.
And you believe all this stuff to be true. What's the source of your information?
Well, we will take information that is given to us. We will research it. We dig into it as deep as possible, whether it's on the web pages or whatever. We will actually, I have guys of mine that will actually get into it, go back all the way to the sources of it to find out information. It has been something that we've been doing now for over a year to get all the information possible that we can.
So basically you want to impeach him because you think that he's not a natural-born citizen and therefore ineligible to be president.
That is one of the main reasons,
yes. Kind of a birther argument.
I mean, he's doing things in this country that is against the Constitution of America. It's against the better benefit of the American people. And
like
the thing
what?
Is, all we're doing is we are letting the American people know what can be done, how to do it, whether it's been in our rally.
So what has he done that's so bad?
Meeting. Sir?
What has he done that's so bad?
What has he done that's so bad? Let's see. He's put us $16.8 trillion in debt. He's printing money that has no backing.
Most of that.
He's writing loans to China. He's bailing out every country around the world, thinning out our military. What has he done that's good?
Okay. Well, that's an interesting list. I could give you a list, but I don't. I mean, you know, he passed health care reform, he passed the stimulus, he passed Wall Street reform, he ended the war in Iraq, he drew down the Afghanistan war, he eliminated Osama bin Laden, he knocked off Muammar Gaddafi, he saved the U.S. auto industry, he saved the U.S. banks, he saved the U.S. economy from a depression, he improved America's image abroad, he boosted fuel efficiency standards.
Actually,
I mean, I'm about a third of the way through the list if you want.
Business.
Yeah, you shouldn't ask me questions that I'm guessing were rhetorical because I'll give you actual answers. But
I don't mind the actual answers. That's the whole thing. I'll give you the actual answers.
I know, and I didn't mean to say that you weren't. Grand Wizard Preston, do you get that the symbology and even the name, I mean the Ku Klux Klan, that you're associating yourself with has, you know, has been associated with the murder of people over the years, that there are people who you know, when they see you dressed like, you know, a Klan's member, are frightened, that they recall. I mean, that the Klan is an organization that has a long history of torture and murder. Why would you associate yourself like that? Why not create, if you don't think the president's a legitimate president, why not start a new group that, like, you know, impeach the president because he's not, you know, because his dad is from Kenya or something?
Well, there's a whole lot of different features that of here. For one thing, as many bad things as the Klan has done, it's actually done a lot of very good things, too.
For example?
Things were mostly done during the Civil Rights Movement era. And when people mention the KKK, the first thing people do is go directly back to that era, exactly to that era. And then all the bad things come out.
Well, it was in the 1940s that the Klan, you know, castrated a black dentist because he had the audacity to see a white patient. I mean, it was there's I could give you some, you know, some pretty curl your hair stories
too as well. I mean, it, like I said,
March 3rd, 1921, J.L. Cockrell was actually he was the guy who was castrated by the Klan.
Okay.
Ferdy Walker was killed in the 30s in Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay,
I mean, why associate yourself with a group that's known for murder and castration and things?
Okay, well let me give you another thing here. Hold on. If you look at it this way, would you condemn the entire Catholic religion because a couple of priests have had sex with young boys? No, you wouldn't. So please don't condemn the entire organization, the Ku Klux Klan, because of idiocy and violent points of some people who took things to an extremity that should not have happened. We're not saying that bad things haven't happened.
But the core of the Catholic Church isn't about having sex with you know, with kids. The core of the Catholic Church is a very different thing. The core of the Ku Klux Klan is racial separation. And this, you know, this murder of people of other races and castrations and things, those were simply part of that mechanism of racial separation.
It was done by people who were extremists, though. It was not done by everybody in the organization. The orders were not given down from somebody high up, and it was people just doing extreme things, and it happens in life, period. The Klan is not about violence. They're not trying to be violent.
You mean anymore?
They are a separatist organization. Yes, they are. They do believe that the races should not mix. They do believe that we would like to be separate from the other races, but we're not knocking the other races. We're not against the other races. If a black man works 40 hours a week, pays his taxes, and raises his family in a decent atmosphere, we don't have a problem with him. But if another black man wants to sell his wife on one corner and drugs on the other, yes, we have a problem with that.
Would you have a problem with a white man doing that?
Huh?
Would you have a problem with a white man doing that?
Yes, I would.
Would you go out and tar and feather him or lynch him or castrate him for it?
No.
I mean, I don't see a history of the Klan going against white people who were not behaving well.
Actually, the Klan has actually done more against whites than it actually has people of color.
How so?
You just didn't hear about those. That's the whole thing.
For example?
The thing with the Klan is it was a good organization at one time. The things that it has done over the years, certain, I would say, extremists have given it an extremely bad name. We want the good name of it to come back. The name where back in the 20s when they ran soup kitchens, back in the 20s when, you know.
For white people.
No. There was not just for white people. Anybody who wanted to come into one of their soup kitchens was welcome to eat. It did not matter color.
Huh, interesting.
A soup kitchen cannot determine race.
Okay.
If you're going to give one person food, you have to give all food.
Okay. I don't disagree with that. Richard Preston, the Imperial Wizard of the Confederate White Knights of the State of Maryland, ConfederateWhiteKnights.com is the website, Confederate White Knights, KNIGHTS. Is the website. Richard Preston, thank you for being with us.
All right, thank you again, Tom.
Good talking.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, isn't that interesting? The Klan is back. 15 minutes past the hour. Well, the one real question I had for the Klan guy was, why the Klan? I mean, you could pick all these different organizations to be a member of. You could have been a Republican, right? I mean, you think Obama's black, or you think Obama shouldn't be president? Well, there's Republicans for that. I mean, you know, it's could have been a a follower of Donald Trump. Why the Klan? But I don't think I got a straight answer. This whole Duck Dynasty thing, this blows my mind. I, in fact, last night, and this is exactly, of course, what Phil Robertson wants. Phil Robertson, first of all, you know, Duck Dynasty is a reality TV show that's on A&E channel. And I should look up who owns A&E. I'll bet it's owned by, like, NBC or something. But in any case, it's this incredibly popular show. Like, you know, millions and millions of people watch it. And it's a reality show about these guys with long hair and beards who are, you know, sit around and talk about being Christian, all of the good stuff. And they made a bunch of money selling duck calls to duck hunters. And Phil is worth $15 million. He lives on a 20,000-acre estate. But they've got this shtick, you know, this good old boy shtick that people just lap up. They're not, they don't realize that they're looking at a group of millionaires, multimillionaires. And so, you know, he drops this bomb on in a GQ interview about how in the Jim Crow South, when he was growing up, he's the old man, he's dad of the family, about how when he was growing up, and I quote, "I never with my eyes saw the mistreatment of any black person, not once." I grew up in Louisiana, right? Jim Crow South. "Not once. Where we lived was all farmers. The blacks worked for the farmers. I hoed cotton with them. I'm with the blacks because we're white trash. We're going across the field. They're singing and happy. I never heard one of them, one black person, say, 'I'll tell you what, these doggone white people,' not a word. Pre-entitlement, pre-welfare, you say, were they happy? They were godly. They were happy. No one was singing the blues." In other words, it's entitlement programs like, what, Social Security, and welfare programs like, what, aid-dependent child, that has made black people not happy? In the 30s and 40s in the South, before the Civil Rights Act? Really? So anyhow, he says this, and then he says some bad things about gay people, his thoughts on gay sex not being appealing to him. And GLAAD came out, and the gay activist group came out and pointed out that this was not exactly the kind of thing that you should be saying if you're on network television, and A&E suspended him indefinitely. Which means that it's going to be short enough to let the, you know, wait until the storm blows over, but long enough that it can't be criticized. You know, you can't say, oh, my, you know, they only suspended him for a week. So multimillionaire Phil gets kicked off the show. And then all the right wingers jump in because, you know, it's all about dog whistle to the racists, right? It's all about the dog whistle to the people who want to be members of the Klan, but don't have the craziness to do it or the courage to do it. Courage is probably the wrong. It's absolutely the wrong word. Whatever it is that it takes to be upfront and open about what a bigot you are, these Republicans don't have it. So they speak in dog whistle. So you have, for example, and I find this hysterical, Sarah Palin. When Martin Bashir, a man who is of Middle Eastern ancestry, speaks with a British accent, even worse, and was taking a liberal position, or at least was knocking Sarah Palin. I mean, that's what he did, is he said something bad about Sarah Palin. When he does that on CNN, Sarah Palin says the following. Those with that platform, excuse me, sneezing here. Those with that platform, with a microphone, a camera in their face, they have to have some more responsibility taken. In other words, if you're on TV, you need to be more responsible, Sarah says. So it's really, you know, the CNN had the right to fire Martin Bashir, and in fact, the duty to fire him, because he should have been more responsible in what he said, and they're a for-profit corporation. And this has got nothing to do with the government. This has to do with a for-profit corporation firing a multimillionaire for-profit news guy. Well, A&E is a for-profit corporation, and they fired a multimillionaire for-profit TV star. What does she have to say about that? Free speech is an endangered species. Those intolerant, hating, and taking on the Duck Dynasty patriarch for voicing personal opinion are taking on all of us. Right. So saying that black people were happy in the South back at the tail end of Reconstruction and right up through the end of the Civil Rights Movement, saying that black people were happy in the South, Sarah, is taking you on? Really? Saying the gay people are sinners is taking you on? And that's the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects you against. See, this is astounding. This woman actually ran for vice president of the United States. The First Amendment protects us against the government censoring us, not against A&E censoring us. You know, if A&E wants to, you know, well, they do. I mean, they want to decide what's on their air. Isn't it the conservative Republican position that A&E, a giant corporation, should be able to decide who they want to have on and what they want that person to say? I mean, you know, Fox down in Florida took it all the way to a state Supreme Court over whether they had the right to force their correspondents to lie about GMO foods. Just Google Fox RGBH lawsuit and get the story of that little story. But somehow, because Phil Robertson was making a racist comment and a homophobic comment, suddenly Sarah and Ted Cruz are all with him. Really?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
I think it's a really interesting juxtaposition to have the Klan just being upfront about what they're all about and have Sarah Palin, well, I guess, tell you the story. Welcome back, Tom. I'm here with you. Well, it's Friday, so it's Anything Goes Friday, so we can talk about any topic you would like. Although, you know, I think we've set up a couple. The president's having his press conference, and he's talking about how Obamacare is really working, particularly in those states that set up the exchanges. Now, the states that didn't set up the exchanges are, you know, trying to sabotage Obamacare, and it's not working as well because they had, you know, 6 weeks of bad interneting or whatever, but it's moving along. It's moving along well. So anyhow, Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, what's on your mind today?
Happy holidays to you and everybody over there.
And the same to you, Johnny. Thank you.
Hey, Tom, before I share with you my experience with the KKK, let me ask you, that photograph, that still that you had behind him of Richard Preston, was that a photograph that he supplied your staff, or did you all bring it up from public file somewhere?
I don't know. He was on our TV show last night, so it's from, and it's, okay. Jim says it's from their website, then. Their website is, ConfederateWhiteKnights.com.
So himself on the website that you know what he actually looks like, is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We didn't show a picture of his face? Oh, you only had him in hood?
Wearing a,
oh, that's interesting.
Behind
a
mask.
Yeah.
You know,
see, last night I had him on the TV show, and he came in to the studio, and we had him. I'll have to get a picture of that. Apparently, his face is not on his website. Just the mask. But you know, he was on TV with me last night, so he's.
That would be a fair criticism then, if he has had his face on TV.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's fine. I don't know if you're aware of this. You probably know that I'm a member of our Pacifica radio station here in Houston.
That's great. Good on you.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd love to support stuff like what you guys do. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people may not know that our Pacifica station, KPFT, is the one and only radio station that had been bombed off the air by dynamite by the KKK.
Wow.
Not once, but twice, several times in a row. Twice, several months apart, I should say, back in the early 1970s when we first went on the air.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and
did they ever catch the guys?
I've never seen any photographs of the KKK distributing lunches or breakfasts to anybody, but there's plenty of still photographs and motion pictures of the Black Panthers doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the legacy is far different between the Black Panthers trying to empower themselves and what the KK has done.
Yeah.
You're right. The legacies are very different.
Yeah, I'm with you, Johnny. And that's why you know, I didn't get a straight answer to the question, or maybe I did get a straight answer to the question of why
no, you
would.
Didn't.
Well, I think I did indirectly when you say, you know, why would you associate yourself with an organization that has this kind of history? And then what you get as a justification of the organization is that, you know, he must believe in the history of the organization or in the organization. I mean, I don't want to personalize this too much because he's not here to defend himself. But if somebody wants to you know not like black people or people of any. You know, anything or just like white people or what, just become a Republican. I mean, they're relatively straightforward about it and have been since the Nixon administration. You don't have to go all the way to the
point. I want to share something else with you related to this.
Yeah, go ahead, Johnny.
Okay, I was in the lobby of our radio station. This was maybe 2 years ago during one of our fund drives. And a gentleman wearing a trench coat walked in through the front door. And he handed one of our people a $100 bill or $200 bills. Well, what's it, $400 now? I forget. It's been such a long time. But it was quite a bit of money, and it was basically an apology for having once thrown a brick through one of our glass windows.
Wow.
He has identified himself as being with the KKK.
Wow.
So there is hope out there.
What had,
we
what,
still have to maintain vigilance.
What had Pacifica done back in the 70s What had the Pacifica done back in the 70s that PO'd the Klan so much?
Well, I guess Pacifica was a threat to people here in Texas who just don't like open speech debate. I mean, you see, there's a whole pattern of that stuff going on back then.
Yeah.
Look at all the killings of people that were more progressive-oriented. Martin Luther King,
John and Bobby
Malcolm
Kennedy.
X, a whole bunch of folks back then. It was a very scary time. You know that. You're old enough to remember that.
Oh, yeah. I remember it well. I think your point is
well
made.
That's the legacy that we have to keep in mind. Let's not let people rewrite his story.
There you go. Okay, Johnny, thank you very much. Thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. Steve in Chicago. Hey, Steve.
Yes, I wanted to make a couple of points. I am sorry that the gentleman, I use that term in as broad as possible sense of the word, from the Ku Klux Klan was not still on, because I would like to ask him, you know, given all of the evidence, you know, that contradicts his notion that somehow the people who committed these acts were outliers. They were rogue elements of this otherwise really wonderful organization. Even though you've got tapes, you've got testimony, you've got all of this evidence out there that shows that many of these acts came straight from the top of the leadership of this group for many, many decades. And this notion that, well, you know, we're not responsible. Well, by that logic, you know, Hitler, Goebbels, Goering, Himmler, I doubt a single one of them ever killed a Jew or a Slav or a Gypsy themselves.
With their own hands, yeah.
And beyond that, I demand that these people, and not just his group, but others, who want to question the legitimacy of Barack Obama's presidency, I mean, please offer up the evidence. Do not tell me that you have people looking at other websites. You know, I mean, I can find a website.
Last night on the TV program, he said that he got this information from The Blaze, Glenn Beck's website. And that's his phrase, not mine. He identified... He said, I get it.
One discreditable individual quoting another discreditable individual. I mean, I'm convinced. You know, forget the fact that there's no peer review scholarship here. I mean, forget the fact that the Republican Party, which could profit from this immensely, you know, discredit the Democratic Party, remove this president from office as he would be illegitimate. Where is the federal filing with the name attached of a single prominent Republican in this country? In a single court that challenges the legitimacy of the presidency.
Well,
of
give you know, think back to the late 90s and what they went through, how they twisted themselves 16 ways to Sunday into pretzels to impeach Bill Clinton before they finally found a smoking gun in Monica Lewinsky. You know, bad pun not intended. You know, but they went through the Rose Law Firm, his wife's law firm, and they had to have all the papers. And they couldn't find the papers that, you know, of the law cases that Hillary worked on 30 years earlier. It was a scandal. They went through, you know, she fired a travel agent. Oh my, because she didn't get along with her, or didn't like, or it was just time to replace, you know, last president's appointees with this. Oh my God, that's a scandal worthy of impeachment. Back when Bill Clinton was in his 30s, he made an investment of $35,000 in a land deal, and he lost it all. And oh well, that's worth impeaching him over. You know, I mean, it's like Whitewater. You know, it's like, I think it's just because it had the word water, and they thought that was close enough to Watergate that they could do it. But it's like, I wouldn't be surprised to see one of these crazy, you know, one of the crazier parts of the Republican Party actually try to impeach them. There's been several of them who in the last 6 months have openly talked. I mean, elected officials openly talked about impeaching President Obama.
Exactly. And it's interesting because they will cater to that part of that wing of their party. But
yeah,
no one is actually going to step up and do it because they know that they would be ridiculed in the end.
Well, this is what Sarah Palin is doing right now. Sarah Palin is coming out, you know, defending, you know, Phil Robertson, Mr. Duck Dynasty, Mr. the black people were just so happy before civil rights. She's defending him by saying that A&E, which is owned in joint venture, by the way, between Disney and who was it, Shano? Hearst. Oh, yeah, Patty Hearst's grandfather's company. So Disney and Hearst own A&E, and they've decided that this isn't the kind of speech they want on their network. And Sarah Palin is saying that, the haters got him, right? Got Phil. Of course, when CNN kicked Martin Bashir off, she said, oh, good. You know, he's got to have more responsible. He's got to have more responsible talent. Anyhow, Steve, thank you for the call. We got a lot of calls here. I want to get into this stuff. John in Novi, Michigan. Hey, John, what's up? What's on your mind?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine.
Oh, great. I wanted to comment on the conversation you had concerning the man that said these racist and anti-gay remarks.
The Duck Dynasty guy, Phil Robertson?
I worked in Dallas, Texas for Delta Airlines back in the 60s. And the word you're looking for to explain this man's behavior is machismo.
Hmm.
It all into the anti, anybody that they don't agree with, they come down on and use that.
Yeah.
And they brag about it. And I worked at Delta Airlines on the tarmac there, and one day one of the white old Southern boys came up to me and it says, what are you Yankee doing down here taking our jobs for? And I said, I got to make a living. And he didn't understand that. He made my life pretty miserable until I left the organization. But I just wanted to comment, yeah, back in the 60s, probably now even today, there is still this anti-humanist behavior.
Yeah.
That's all I can call it.
Yeah, and I'm assuming you're a white guy.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine what he would have been saying if it was a black guy?
Oh, I might have not been left living.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the point. A lot of African-Americans were not left living by the Klan. And that's the really serious and sobering part of it. And that's where I'm scratching my head wondering how any person, even if in this modern era with that history, how any person, even if they want to impeach the president, even if they've read Glenn Beck's website and they're convinced the president is, actually an Indonesian citizen, why they would use the Klan instead of just the good old-fashioned Republican Party, like, you know, regular people do. John, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And I think it's particularly ironic that in the next hour or so, our Klan Grand Wizard is going to be meeting with his friends in a government building to impeach the president. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see here. Dean in Camino, California. Hey, Dean, you wanted to talk about voting machines?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. I hope the same is true of you.
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
Good. So what's on your mind?
I'm amazed that how did Diebold get away with programming or saying that they didn't have to have any paper trail out of these machines.
They're still saying it. They're still doing it. I mean,
that's the thing that amazes me. I mean, I'm 57 now, and back in my 20s, I did a little programming, and I could program a machine to swap boats.
Mm-hmm.
And Greg Palance actually went in. I don't know if you've seen Greg Palance's demonstration where he went into a voting booth where they had the machines, and he put in five Republican votes and five Democrat votes, and it came out. He put in like five Republican and eight Republican or Democrat votes, and it came out the opposite.
Right. Yeah. No. Greg Palance has done some great work in that area, and he's been on this program talking about it. He wrote a book about it. I wrote a couple of articles about it. This was back in the day, back in 2002, 2004, 2006. Those elections, you know, there was some real electronic shenanigans going on while the Bushes were around.
Well, they could modify these machines so that when a person votes, they could get a printout of their vote and then double verify it when they walked out. To the people who verify.
Yeah, but see, here's the problem. Even if you vote on an electronic machine and you say you voted for Obama and it gives you a printout that says you voted for Obama, that doesn't mean that it's reporting to the central tabulator that you voted for Obama. That there should be no machines involved. Or if there are machines involved, they should be owned by our government and they should be open source programmed so that everybody can see what's going on inside them. And
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, let's just get rid of the black boxes. You know, this whole corporate ownership of our vote thing. You know, of all the things that we're going to privatize, privatizing prisons was stupid. Privatizing power systems, crazy. I mean, look at Enron. Privatizing water systems. I mean, these are all obvious commons. But the commons of all the commons is our vote. That's how we regulate our government, is by our vote. And to privatize that is the ultimate sin against democracy, in my opinion. That's the last thing that should ever have been privatized.
I couldn't agree with you more. And on one other subject, that you know, the Republicans are always yelling about, you know, you can't change the Constitution, you can't touch the Constitution about the Second Amendment and all these other things. And yet, aren't they the one responsible for changing the Constitution so that the president can only serve two terms?
Yeah. Yeah, that was after FDR served four terms, or three and a half.
Right.
After he got elected four times. Yeah, there was some serious angst on the part of the Republican Party there, and then, you know, I think it was during the Eisenhower presidency that they amended the Constitution to say only two terms, and which was fine with Dwight. He was kind of an old guy to begin with. But then when Ronnie Reagan came along, they were going, oh man, we can't have a third term, you know, bummer. Anyhow, Dean, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And just a reminder, Senator Sanders will be here in our third hour answering your questions. Our Brunch with Bernie hour is going to be the third hour today because of the crazy vote. Bernie had a vote this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning here in D.C. And so he's on an airplane back to Vermont right now as we speak. And in about an hour or so, he'll be settled in presumably at his office. I don't know, maybe from home, and calling into the show. So we will have Bernie in a little more than an hour and 10 minutes. So stick around. So, Daryl in Gary, Indiana. Hey, Daryl, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind? You want to talk about the KKK?
Yeah, we'll talk about those guys, too, and the corporations that seem to be pushing this private agenda, too, as well, if we get a chance to. Yeah, Tom, I remember watching Geraldo Rivera's national syndicated talk show, and during a series, when he interviewed Klansmen and skinheads and hammer skins, and they explained their colors and their codes and their symbols and things like that, they promised during that series at some point, I think it was late 80s or early 90s, they promised to infiltrate the government, position themselves in every facet of government in order to do what they want to do with those that they called undesirable.
Hmm.
I'll never forget that.
That's amazing. Well, Daryl, this is one of the, you know, had I had Grand Wizard, Imperial Wizard is his title, Richard Preston on for a longer period of time, I wanted to go through a list of Republican policies and just ask him, you know, does he disagree with any of them? My sense of it is that probably the Republican Party and the Klan are not that far apart on most issues, but I can't say that authoritatively. I just, it's just a gut instinct. But Daryl, thank you for the call and you know, great comments. Richard in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Richard.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You wanted to talk about the Klan?
You know, the Klan guy, the Grand Poobah, I call him. Mm-hmm. You know, you got into an interesting point. Why would you associate your name with an organization like that? And he said, you know, the Catholics. But I think I would have then said Nazis. You know, why doesn't he just go around and proclaim himself to be a Nazi? Why doesn't the Klan have that same sort of stink, that someone going around calling himself a Nazi?
Well, there are people who call themselves Nazis in the United States, Richard. I had the head of the Nazi Party on this program 2 years ago. You know, we did a back-to-back with the head of the Communist Party. It was really interesting. But, I don't know. I find it sociologically fascinating, but
these people are they're anti-Semitic as well. I mean, there's a whole
extremely.
Host. Why would anybody associate themselves with that and to say that the grand old days when we did some good? I mean, the man is an idiot. That when you talk to him, all of his sources that were driving them to impeachment were ridiculous. I mean, he doesn't understand anything.
But there's a whether or not he's an idiot, I can't testify to. I have no idea what his intelligence is, but what I do know, and I know this from having grown up in Michigan and having hung out with Michigan militia people, not hung out with, but having known some of these people when I was a teenager, and is that Klan mentality and the militia mentality are not that different. In fact, the Klan, before it reinvented itself, you know, Stone Mountain 1915 following Birth of a Nation, you know, Birth of a Nation was this giant recruiting thing for the Klan in the early part of the 20th century, but back in the late and back in the early and through, you know, in the early 19th century when slavery was still legal in the United States, the Klan and back in the 18th century when the Constitution was being written, the Klan was the militia. I mean that's what the Second Amendment was all about, was making sure that the federal government could not take away the weapons of people in the states, where the states had militias that were designed to keep the slaves down. They called them slave patrols. And yes, in some states, the Klan ran the slave patrols. And it's just, I mean, it's just, there's a long history there. Anyhow, Richard, thank you for the call. It's an interesting thing. It's a very, very interesting. Robert in Gray Court, South Carolina. Hey, Robert, your cousin was killed?
Yes. What happened was that some blacks had run their car out of the road, and he stopped by to help. And a couple of Klan wannabes, or they might have been Klan members, ran out of the road and ran through the crowd and overran my cousin and killed him. And when they saw that they had killed a white man, they turned around and came back and threatened the witnesses. And so no arrest was ever made.
Whoa.
Or no prosecution or anything.
Where was this?
This was in South Carolina in Lawrence County.
In what year? Or what era?
1950.
1950.
Yes.
Wow.
I thought that'd be worth knowing.
Yeah, it was. It was. Thank you very much, Robert, for the call. I appreciate it. Wojtek, and thanks for sharing that story. Wojtek in San Francisco. Hey, Wojtek.
Hi, Tom. First time caller. Love your show.
Thank you. You wanted to comment on the Klan? We got just a minute till the end of this hour.
Two comments. Why is this intellectual powerhouse wearing the white hood besides me?
Right.
Second question is...
I can't answer that.
So. Yeah, I know.
I don't know.
Second question is, he made the comment that he is all inclusive, sort of speak. Mm-hmm. All the races can, you know, he has no grudge against races. How about black men joining KKK?
Yeah. I think the only time that's ever happened was when they made the film Blazing Saddles. It was just for the big screen.
I told my wife that before I called you.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be a great question. If you love all the races, can the black man join you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's what he's going to do is he's going to say the same thing that the respectable racists say. The people like Ron Paul, who defends the right of a golf club to say whites only. To this day, Rand Paul defends the right of a restaurant not to serve black people. To this day. Because they say that it's not the government's business to interfere in those things. And it's all about private contract. And people should have the right of association, which is guaranteed by the First Amendment, and to define with whom they want to associate. That's the argument that's made by the respectable racists. Wojcik, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, Sarah Palin's getting on it. Ted Cruz has gotten jumped into it. So here you've got a guy, a multimillionaire. He's worth $15 million, Phil Robertson. He lives on a 20,000-acre estate down in Louisiana. He's got his own reality TV show, him and his sons, or his family. I watched a five-minute clip of it on Hulu, but I haven't seen the whole show, so I can't speak authoritatively about it beyond that. But I think the reports are reasonably accurate that the guy's a multimillionaire. And he gets interviewed by GQ and says, speaking of the position of black people before the Civil Rights Act, because he's an old guy, and he remembers back before the civil rights laws, back before, before entitlement and welfare. He says, I never with my eyes saw the mistreatment of any black person growing up in Louisiana. Not once. Where we lived was all farmers. The black works for the farmers. I hoed cotton with them. I'm with the blacks because we're white trash. We're going across the field. They're singing and happy. I never heard one of them, one black person, say, I'll tell you what, those doggone white people. Not a word. Pre-entitlement, pre-welfare. You say, were they happy? They were godly. They were happy. No one was singing the blues. Right. Black people were just so happy to be going to segregated schools and segregated buses and segregated bathrooms. And Phil Robertson just never noticed anything bad about that. Oh, and he doesn't like gay people either. So when Martin Bashir, when CNN, and I don't know who owns CNN, MSNBC. Oh, he was. Okay, when Martin Bashir was on MSNBC and they fired him for saying something nasty about Sarah Palin, she said, quote, those with that platform with a microphone, a camera in their face, they have to have some responsibility taken. In other words, you're on TV, be responsible. But when Mr. Duck Dynasty, multimillionaire Phil Robertson, says, hey, I got a problem with gay people, and black people were really happy before civil rights, she says, free speech is an endangered species. Those intolerance, hating, and taking on the Duck Dynasty patriarch for voice and personal opinion are taking on all of us. Really? Reverend Bill Keller is on the line, the founder of LivePrayer.com. LivePrayer.com, of course, the website. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Tom, Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you, Bill. As a Christian conservative in the United States, Don't you find it pretty creepy what this guy, Phil Robertson, said about black people just loving segregation in the United States?
You know, I got to be honest with you. His comments about black people prior to the Civil Rights Act, I did find very disturbing. But unfortunately, I think if you go throughout Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana and some of those places, you're going to find similar bigotry in that respect. However, it wasn't the NAACP that came out against him. It was all of the homosexual activists.
Well, it was one specifically, GLAD. It was one gay group, GLAD.
Sure, sure. Yeah, they come after me all the time, too, because we have the audacity to state that the Bible calls their choice of sin what the Bible calls it, a sin. I don't know why they're so offended when they want all the people to be tolerant of their actions, yet when somebody opposes what they choose to do in the privacy of their bedroom, and yet they want society to accept it as normal, they're the most intolerant people of all.
Well, that's a very interesting perspective, Bill. We've done a couple of shows on this, and the thing that I find really interesting is that straight men rarely would characterize being gay as a choice, but bisexual men or gay men who are in the closet would clearly think that homosexuality was a choice.
Well, most definitely is, because here's the argument, because I've been down this road with a bunch of homosexual advocates for the past two decades. You don't have to choose to be normal. You do have to choose to engage in abnormal sexual activity. You're born, Tom, here's the bottom line. You're born with black skin or white skin. You're born with blue eyes or green eyes. You don't have a choice in that. Taking your pants off to have sex is a choice, unless now you want to make the argument you're nothing but an animal that has no ability to control.
So you're saying, in your experience, the decision to have sex with another man is and enjoy it is, or sex with a woman and enjoy it for that matter, mm-hmm. is purely a matter of choice based on your experience.
It is identical to a person that picks up a glass of alcohol and drinks to the verge of becoming an alcoholic. They choose to do that. Nobody puts that glass in their hand.
I'd say, Bill,
same way with drugs. Nobody forces a needle in somebody's arms. It's a choice they make to engage in that type of activity. That's all.
Okay, so then you're self-identifying as a bisexual man, as a man who can go either way.
I'm identifying as somebody who doesn't have to make that choice, because I'm simply acting naturally as God created me, which was a man and a woman. And you don't have to be in a first grade sex education class to understand two men don't go together, two women don't go together. It is obviously an abnormal, unhealthy, unnatural choice of sexual relations.
From your point of view.
If people want to do that, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that.
We're starting
to just accept it.
We're starting to get repetitive, both of us here. I'd like to move to the second area of this bill.
Okay.
And that is the First Amendment and free speech. Sarah Palin is making the argument, Ted Cruz is making the argument that Disney, which owns A&E, or owns a good chunk of it, is limiting the free speech rights of multimillionaire Phil Robertson.
Nobody has free speech to go on somebody's network. Listen, I've been kicked off 5 CBS stations where I've aired my TV program over the last 15 years, right. 5 different markets. Stop airing me because they didn't like the fact that I spoke out against the false religion of Islam. I spoke out against the sin of homosexuality. It's not right I have to be on anybody's TV station, even if I pay to be on there, which I did. So those arguments are specious at best.
Okay, so you're,
I agree with you on that.
You're not down with the Phil Robertson's. Was there a TV star by the name of Phil Robertson? Wasn't there back in the 50s? This name sounds so familiar to me.
There might have been, but
I think it was Pat Robertson.
You know,
that's who it was.
The funny thing is, this is one of these instances I've ever seen where the sponsors are actually backing the guy. It's going to be interesting to see if A&E, just because of the money they make off these people, whether they're going to back down.
So the advertisers are taking the position that his bigotry in GQ is okay, but the network is saying it's not okay. Is that what you're telling me?
The network has kowtowed to these acts being a political action groups like GLAAD.
Right.
But so far the sponsors are standing by him, so it'll be interesting. But you know, at the end of the day, whether he's on TV or not, the only issue here, and the real issue here, is, you know, people have got to understand that not everybody has to be bullied into silence. You know, we get so much of this bullying nonsense from people on the left end of the political spectrum. I mean, and they demand tolerance. You must be tolerant of how we choose to live. Great. Well, how come you can't be tolerant of people who happen to take a biblical view of the world and view what your choice is as a sin?
Well, I'll tell you why I'm not tolerant of that. I'm not tolerant of that because it leads young gay teenage boys and girls to commit suicide.
No, you.
It destroys lives. I think that kind of bigotry destroys lives.
God bless you. You just gave me a Christmas present with a bow on it. What leads young gay boys to commit suicide are people like Rachel Maddow, Anderson Cooper, Don Lemon, and these other people that fill their heads with nonsense when they don't even know what being gay is. That, oh, it's okay to be gay.
But you know what being gay is, Bill.
Pardon me?
You know what being gay is, because you made a choice.
We deal with thousands of men and women every day in that bondage, which is no different than any other bondage like alcoholism and drug addiction, to find freedom from that
so
bondage.
So you were in the bondage of being gay.
To promote this lifestyle on programs like Glee, that's what leads these kids jumping off the GW bridge.
Okay, hang on, Bill.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This guy always steps on me. Bill Keller, liveprayer.com is the website. Bill, thank you for dropping by. Merry Christmas to you too, sir. Well, it wasn't that special. Merry Christmas. What you're getting here is a glimpse in. This is like cracking open Fox News without having to turn on Fox News. Only having people actually speak the way they really think rather than talking in code. Because when Sarah Palin is saying, you know, and this is off the front page of Democratic Underground, free speech is endangered species, those intolerance, hating, and taking on the Duck Dynasty patriarch for voice and personal opinion are taking on all of, well, she's just saying, you know, bigotry is just okay with us. It's really pretty amazing, you know, when you think about it. Sherry. In Bradley, California. You want to talk about wild horses today. It's Anything Goes Friday. What's up, Sherry?
Hi. Happy holidays.
Well, thank you. Happy holidays to you, too, Sherry.
That my son is gay, and supposedly Christianity and Jesus was all about love, and I love him more than anything, and it's none of that guy's business what anybody does or who they love. I also wanted to say I was very upset when you just said about Martin Brashear that MSNBC would do that, and I'm really disgusted with them because he was one of the best people on there. And for them to fire him over Sarah Palin, something, a comment she made, she is the most ignorant woman I don't
know
on the planet. I don't know. There might be some more ignorant people, but she's, you know, that's the only nice word I can say about her is that she's so ignorant.
Well, you know, I don't think that you get to be governor of a state, and I don't think that you get to be a multimillionaire like Sarah Palin is. And you know, with a media, basically a media empire, by being dumb. She might be ignorant, but I don't think she's stupid, if I'm using language with any precision, and I think I'm not. But,
okay, well, I don't think she has good intentions behind her.
Maybe. I'm inclined to suspect that all these people actually have good intentions, that they think that their view of the world is the best. If only everybody would think the way they did, the world would be a much better place. And they lack information, they lack understanding. On the other hand, I think there are some people who have a hustle going. They figured out that if they do a particular act and cater to a particular crowd, that they can get very rich doing that. Phil Robertson and the whole Duck Dynasty thing. I mean, it's a business. It's a multimillion-dollar business.
Those are good intentions.
And Sarah Palin is a business too. And when it reaches the level of it being a business, then maybe it's not good intentioned. So maybe you're right.
Yeah, and I also wanted to complain about somebody else on MSNBC, and I'm going to say it to you because I live way out in the country and I can't afford internet because it's a lot more expensive, so I haven't been able to get a hold of her. But it's somebody I support on MSNBC, and she, you know, I'm not really into the, you know, evangelical stuff. I think they've twisted it, and like I said, I think Jesus was all about love.
We're running out of time here, Sherry.
But one thing they said was in the Ten Commandments, they mentioned thou shalt not kill, and they added the word people.
Right.
And in the Ten Commandments, I believe that...
It doesn't say people. You're right. So you're concerned about the wild horses. I got it. Sherry, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. Anything goes Friday, so let's just pick up your calls here. Tim in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for all you do, and happy Merry Christmas, Hana Kwanzaa.
There you go. Back at you.
My comments are on this Duck Dynasty thing, mm-hmm. and I just want to comment that even though the First Amendment protects your right to free speech, the First Amendment does not protect you from the consequences of your speech. And when you say something inflammatory and someone throws water on you, you know you're going to have water thrown on you for inflammatory comments. And if we cry like a baby, that's pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
Just pathetic.
Well, I haven't seen Phil crying about this. I think he's laughing all the way to the bank. He's got more publicity than he could ever want, and he's all over the internet. He's probably increased his ratings significantly. His $15 million is probably going to become $30 million in short order.
Yeah, well, let me just ask you a question. Mm-hmm. When Bill Maher lost his job, his show and his network,
right.
When Don Imus lost his job, his show and his network, when Martin Bashir lost his job, his show, and his network, when did anyone on the right lose their job, their show, and their network? When was Bill O'Reilly called out for asking terrorists to attack San Francisco two nights in a row? When was Glenn Beck called back for calling the president a hater of whites? When did that ever happen?
Yeah, and I would add Phil Donahue to that list of liberals who were taken off the air. Excellent question, Tim. To the best of my knowledge, no right-winger has
never been called to account on their side. We call them to account on our side all the time. We hold them to account and we take their jobs away. They do not. And my question again is about, what about defamatory law? Aren't there laws about defamation? What are the limits on free speech? If there are defamation laws, there are limits on free speech.
You know, Tim, if I knew your last name and your address and I were to say it on the air and say something slanderous about you, and I don't remember if slander is the spoken word and defamation is the printed word or the other way around, but whatever. You could sue me because you're a private individual. However, you can publish anything you want anywhere on the internet about me and call me anything, including, you know, just horrible things, and I can't sue you because I'm a public figure, because I've chosen to be in the public.
This argument is ridiculous because nobody's free speech has been infringed. This man was allowed to say whatever he wanted, wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted.
Yeah, I agree, and it's the right of Disney to say, you know, we don't stand with that. I'm with you. Tim, thank you for the call. Sarah in Honolulu, Hawaii. Hey, Sarah, you had a question about Medicaid?
Oh, excuse me, Tom. Hi. Yeah, I did. I read last night on the internet about Obama shotgun wedding. Did you read that article in Fiscal Times?
No, I did not.
It's by an Edward Morrissey.
Okay.
And what he's pointing out is kind of scary. It says that if you get enrolled under Obama Medicaid, that you stand the risk of having your house seized.
Why would that be?
Well, when you die, you can't pass it on to heirs because it'll be attached by the government.
No, Sarah, whatever you read is a lie. That's not true.
It'll be attached by the government because Medicaid has covered you.
No.
Not that your employer, not that you have an employer-based insurance.
Right.
But because it was covered by Medicaid and your assets are determined. Right.
This has got nothing to do with Obamacare, Sarah. I watched this happen when my mother was dying, and she died several years after my father died. And the way it works with Medicaid is a variation on something like this, and I don't understand all the details and complexity of it, but if somebody goes into a nursing home and the government pays for that nursing care, and it only happens if they go into a nursing home. My mother died in my brother's house, so this did not happen to us, but we were aware that it could. If somebody goes into a nursing home and they have assets, they have to liquidate those assets first or put them in trust or whatever to pay back the cost of that nursing care. In other words, that's basically more like a loan from the government. If they don't have assets, then the government pays for it entirely. This has been the case for decades. This has got nothing to do with Obamacare. This has to do with people at the end of their lives deciding to go into nursing homes and having enough wealth in theory. Now, you know, my mom had a house that was worth about $90,000. I don't know that that's enough wealth that somebody should have to pay for going into a nursing home. But that's the way Medicaid works at the end of life. That has nothing to do, let me emphasize that in all capital letters, nothing to do with Obamacare. It has nothing to do with whether you sign up for Obamacare. It has been the case as long as I can remember, and I've been on this earth for 6 decades. So although I'm guessing that it's probably only been the case probably since the Johnson or first Bush or Reagan administrations, sometime in there they changed the rules on Medicaid to say that basically they means tested it. You know, these Republicans are always running around saying, let's means test Social Security, let's means test Medicare. They already have means tested Medicaid. And means tested means rich people don't get it. And so, you know, originally probably Medicaid wasn't available to really rich people, but now what they've done is this means testing, this Republican idea of means testing, has crept down to the point where middle class people who have assets like homes, if they go into nursing care, they first have to sell their home and basically become broke. And I don't think it's right. I think it's wrong. It's not a good thing. But like I said, it's got nothing to do with Obamacare. It has to do entirely with Medicaid and how Medicaid is structured around that end-of-life stuff.
Well, I can't imagine Fiscal Times printing that.
Well, I'm guessing if you go back and read the article, knowing what I just told you, mm-hmm. you will discover that it says that, but it says it in a way that's so misleading that people could come to the conclusion that you just came to.
Now, what they're saying is that it's misleading that people don't know up front that if you're like a couple and you live in a home
right.
and one dies, the other won't get that home because they're not married. So that's why it's called Obama Shotgun Wedding.
No, if you're married, you have the right to inherit. If your husband had been in a nursing home and run up a huge bill. But again, it's got nothing to do with Obamacare. Sarah, thank you for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Be really careful. Just because you read something on the internet doesn't make it true. We'll be back. Welcome back. 28 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Colatex Bakery in Chicago is one of the regular sponsors of WCPT, and I have voiced spots for them. I've been there. They've got great food and great gluten-free stuff, too. They sent us a nice little, it's huge, Christmas thing, you know, of goodies from the bakery that Jim and Shane and Danielle and I are chowing down on. So if I have bits of chocolate in my teeth between segments, you'll know where that came from. Anyhow, Thad in Syracuse, Kansas, you want to disagree with me about something?
Yeah, I was just listening to your comments about Phil Robertson and his comments in the GQ article, and just didn't find them at all to be anything racist, homophobic, or bigoted.
Okay. So you think that somebody who was alive before integration, somebody who remembers segregation, and I'm old enough to remember segregation in the United States, and who lived through the civil rights era, and who is alive now looking back on all that history and has, you know, any kind of sense of whatsoever of history, who would say, oh, those black people back then, they were so happy, that person is what, just dumb?
Well, he's not a racist. What the comment he made was, he was referencing his experience and how when he was when he lived in that era and he lived through that, he was just referencing his experience that when he saw that they were not upset, they were not living downtrodden, or they were just living life. I don't know that he necessarily meant that as a racist comment. I don't think he's a racist person.
You think that multimillionaire Phil Robertson was more trying to represent himself as white trash, the phrase that he used, than that he was trying to reference poor blacks as being...
when that happened, he was a very poor individual. I don't know if you know anything about his life, but he came from nothing.
Right, I know.
He, if you ever read his book, Happy, 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 he was a very poor individual.
Okay.
So, I mean, when you reference him as multimillionaire,
he is. He's worth $50 million. He lives.
Dig at him because he built his own empire. I mean,
of course.
He earned it. It's not like it was given to him, you know.
No, I agree. It's not like he was Mitt Romney, you know, who was given $1 million by his father when he went off to college. I'm with you.
I don't think Phil Robertson has a racist bone in his body is what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Well, it may well be. You know, it's I'm probably not a good idea for me to judge other people when I don't know them. Thad, thank you for the call. Donald in Los Angeles. Hey, Donald, what's up? Donald? In Los Angeles? Okay. Ashes in Palatine, Illinois. Hey, Ashes, what's up?
Hi, thanks, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind?
I have a question. How do you think population plays a role in these recent trade deals that happened between like countries like China and India? Because they have populations of over a billion people. How much do you think population plays a factor in those trade deals?
How would you think that? I mean, you know, there are large countries with large and dynamic economies, in part because of the size of their population. But I don't understand the context of the question. What did you mean?
Do you think that since they have so many more people than the U.S. does, that corporations see that they have all these workers, this many more workers than America does, so that's why they ship their jobs over there. They have all these workers producing for them.
Oh, sure.
And plus paying them lower wages, and that way they can get more.
Yeah, the trade deals are all about getting lower wages and lower standards, lower environmental standards and things like that. No, Yeah.
But do you think the other countries are promoting the fact that we have so many more people than your country does, so why don't you bring the jobs over here?
Yeah, of course they are.
You can get many more workers here than what America has.
Yeah, of course they are. Yes.
They are? Okay.
They may not come out and say it in those words, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, not only do they have more people, but China has more landmass. I mean, you know, there's a whole lot more area that you can pollute before you got to clean it up. So, Ash is a good point. Thank you for the call. Darren in Augusta, Georgia. Hey, Darren, what's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. Hartman. I just wanted to address the Duck Dynasty controversy, specifically people who are saying that that the Christian viewpoint is being not tolerated, is being discriminated against. And as far as I know, there isn't any movement to push people away from their biblical beliefs. But it's when you start going so far as to say that gay people are more likely to be pedophiles, or gay people are more likely to have sex with animals. These things are not, that's not an acceptable thing to say.
Yeah, and that's essentially what Phil Robertson said. Yeah.
Exactly. And therein lies the homophobia. As far as the racism, a couple callers back said he didn't think that the guy said a racist thing. Imagine if I were to say, the Holocaust, maybe that wasn't so bad. I mean, I'm not literally saying that Jewish people are inferior, but I'm downplaying a serious plight that they went through historically.
Right.
And the same thing goes for black people in America. If you were to say, well, I never personally saw any black people hurt, so I guess it must have just been Martin Luther King was a rabble rouser. You know, he was just all those people who were protesting. They just didn't get it or something.
Well, that was my point. That's why I said, you know, how could he make such a comment having lived for the last 40 years and just, you know, looking at what's going on?
Exactly. It's willful ignorance. And if you don't seek out that knowledge, it's out there. The history books, I mean, it's on tape. See people being bit by dogs and
All you have to do is watch the news, you know, through the 60s and 70s in particular.
Right.
And he was alive during that time. He was talking about the 40s and 50s. And you know, all you have to do is watch the news to know what's going on.
Precisely. So that type of ignorance is really it's pitiful at best. And it's inexcusable at worst.
Well, I think where all this goes is that Disney decided that kind of ignorance, whether it's willful or intentional or pitiful or just fine, that kind of ignorance was not the way that the Disney Corporation, through its subsidiary A&E Television, wanted to represent themselves. And they have that absolute right. Disney has been very gay friendly, by the way. It's one of the first corporations in America that recognized gay rights and gay marriages and other things, you know, gay partnerships at a corporate level. So that may have something to do with this too. Darren, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Chris in Empire, Colorado. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Tom. How you doing, man?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you, Chris?
I'm doing pretty well, man. Listen, I was listening to you earlier when I was driving home, and you were talking about how you had never been part of any of those skinhead organizations, so you couldn't definitively say whether or not they were like the Republican Party. I can tell you right now, I spent 22 years as a hammer skin and a National Socialist skin because I was a dumb kid, and I'm telling you there is absolutely, positively no difference between the two, especially in the fact that they supposedly all believe in fascism, which in reality is the amalgamation of corporation and state, and that's exactly what they – I mean, it's not so much racism now as just inequality, period.
It's all about the rich folks and the corporations.
And you know, and another thing is that one guy you were talking to said that Rachel Maddow, you know, she and MSNBC talk about gay people, but none of them actually live it. Rachel Maddow is gay. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Well, I think that was the source of his vitriol, was that Rachel's an out lesbian, and that's what has got Bill all worked up. But excellent call, Chris. Thank you very much. Wow, over 20 years as a skinhead, really?
Yeah, absolutely. Can I say one last thing?
You may.
There is no good intentions in not all, but most of the people who run the corporate side of the Republican Party. They're basically psychopaths. That's why they're so successful, because they really don't have any empathy towards anybody under them.
You know, there's an actual substantial body of scientific evidence that backs up that statement, Chris. And I think that
I lived it. I saw it with my own eyes. It is absolutely the way it is.
Yeah. Okay. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Jeffrey in New York City, watching us on Manhattan Neighborhood Network TV. Hey, Jeffrey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
I'm okay. You look good. You don't look six decades.
Well, thank you. I was born in 1951. I'm 62 years old. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just have a question. I want to know, well, let me just say this first. You know, I had gotten caught with a firearm at one time, and I did jail time behind that.
Mm-hmm.
And today I cannot own a firearm because of that.
Right.
I had it because, you know, I got word that I was being sent up on a payday.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so because of this, I can no longer have a firearm.
Right.
So I want to know, why is it okay with the KKK's history and organizations like them, why are they allowed to have firearms?
That's a good question. You know, should that be one of the questions that, you know, when they do a background check on somebody, not only should they be looking for people who committed gun crimes, but they should be looking for people who are members of organizations that have a history of committing gun crimes. And I would think that, you know, the KKK or any hate group would certainly fall into that category. I think that's a very good observation, Jeffrey.
Thanks
a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. And I wish you the very happiest of the holiday seasons. Whatever it may be for you. And a happy new year. That's one I guess we all agree on. Anyhow, we'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Anything goes Friday. Bernie will be with us in 15, 20 minutes answering your questions. Talk Radio News is going to check in and fill us in on how the president's press conference went, and if he made any news, and if he beat Vladimir Putin's 4-hour marathon press conference this morning. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
If he did, though, he'd still be talking, and he's not still talking, so I think Putin got him. We'll be back. Welcome back. Jim in Littleton, Colorado, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite Network. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I got a solution to big government. We can get rid of most of it if we do it what the Swiss are voting on right now, a referendum, to give each person $2,800 a month. If you think about it, we could get rid of welfare, unemployment, Social Security retirement.
Food stamps.
We could get rid of Medicaid and Medicare by having people buy their own insurance. Get rid of housing help, get rid of all the social programs that we've got.
Yeah.
If we just give each person a paycheck.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think that this minimum national annual income thing of, you know, just saying basically nobody's going to fall below this standard that we're going to set, and that standard would be around $30,000, $35,000 a year here in the United States. Everybody's going to get this. I think that that's, you know, it's a great suggestion. And you're right. If you want to get rid of big government, that would do it. Thanks, Jim, for the call. That's a very good suggestion. Jerry in Urbana, Missouri. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Tom. I have a question about nature, the complexity of the human species and Mother Nature itself. I sometimes think maybe homosexuality could actually be Mother Nature's way of controlling the planet's population explosion. I don't know if there's any studies that should be directed that way or not. I would like to see what maybe some of our scientists could come up with on that aspect of homosexuality, instead of everyone having a lot of people having a condemning attitude of something they don't really understand or maybe never really seriously thought about.
Yeah, it's not inconceivable. I think, though, that, I mean, there are, in every animal species, you find a small percentage are gay. And they're not sitting around making a choice, to quote Bill Keller, our guest at the top of the hour. And so I think that this is just a normal part of nature. It's a natural part of nature. The what's going to, you know, where nature is going to weed out the too many people thing, I think that that is war. I think that that is famine. I think that, I mean, you know, there are things that we basically do to ourselves when our population gets too great. But I don't think that they have to do with stuff that's attached to our DNA or the core of who we are. I think they're just, you know, the stupid ways that people behave. It's sort of like, you know, when you put rats into communities and real, real super high density communities, the primary change that they go through is they stop becoming cooperative and they start becoming competitive. They stop becoming collaborative and they start becoming predatory. And in fact, well, I thought the most interesting study was the one we reported on here 2 weeks ago, where those rat studies where the rats would keep pushing the lever for cocaine until they finally died versus the lever for food. They discovered that when the rat wasn't locked up in a little cage but had a whole big, you know, area where the rat could, like, play and, you know, a rat, you know, neighborhood, that those rats didn't keep pressing the cocaine lever, that they would go over to the food lever. And they would occasionally get a little cocaine and get high, but mostly they just wanted the food. And so it's like a quality of life issue. It's like, you know, you could argue then that even things like drug abuse and you know, all these kind of things, all these quote social ills that really are, you know, behaviors that we have arguably some control over, that these come out of poverty and inequality. But I don't think that being gay has anything to do with that personally. I think that that's just part of nature. Jerry, thank you for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsforthegoat.com, where you can give the gift of a goat to a returning slave in South Sudan. Victoria Jones. Hey, happy holidays, Victoria.
I'm the same to you, Tom.
And if I don't, you know, we're taking next week off. We've got some really, really good programs in the bag for it. But if I don't see you before Christmas and the New Year's, you know, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, whatever you're celebrating, I hope it's wonderful.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I hope that the kitten has a first Happy Christmas.
Oh, the kitten, yeah. I emailed you the picture, didn't I?
You did? Oh, fabulous.
Yeah. So the president had a press conference today. It didn't run as long as Mr. Putin's, as President Putin's, but...
No, it didn't, and it wasn't as late as Putin's. Putin apparently likes to be several hours late in his events. It's a way of him showing his power, apparently.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Very interesting. Something that he does. But President Obama gave an opening statement saying unemployment was down, GDP growth is up, oil imports are down, and he said 2014 could be a big year for the United States, a year of action. He also said he wants to extend unemployment benefits in January, push for minimum wage hike, and pass immigration. He noted the Syria chemical weapons development, getting rid of them, and the Afghanistan war is coming to a close. And one of the first questions was whether this has been the worst year of his presidency, which he laughed off, of course. But he talked about being focused on moving the ball forward every year, and he said that that's not how he thinks about it. But he talked about how he was disappointed about gun control, but he said some states passed gun control, and he talked about smaller accomplishments and but he did talk about how legislatively it's been difficult. He talked about health care has been a source of frustration, and he was asked about his biggest mistake in 2013. He said the healthcare.gov website rollout was bad. He said that he was in charge. I screwed it up.
Hmm. Did he call out the Republicans by party or by name at all?
Yes, he did. He was asked about whether he'd negotiate with House Republicans on the debt ceiling, and he said that no,
mm-hmm.
He wouldn't. And made that very clear, and he said that it would be crazy. I've got to assume that folks aren't crazy enough to start that all over again. He said more than once that he had to assume folks weren't crazy enough to do that all over again.
The Wacko Bird Caucus is now being referred to not as a pejorative but as a positive. People are self-identifying with Ted Cruz, Republicans. There was a Republican yesterday.
Because I'm speechless.
Yeah, yesterday or the day before, there was a Republican who was asked if he would be a member of the Wacko Bird Congress, and he said, or caucus, if he was elected, and he said, yes, absolutely. So, back to you. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the person who said it.
Well, maybe a good thing. He was asked about not going to the Olympic Games, and he said he hasn't gone to any Olympics and anywhere his schedule's busy.
So he's kind of downplaying it, like it's not a slap, it's just I'm busy.
Well, he talked about the athletes, and he mentioned Brian Boitano, mm-hmm. and Billie Jean King, and those were the two athletes examples that he gave. And he talked about how the delegation will represent us extraordinarily well, and he talked about their character. And he said when it comes to athletics, we don't judge people by their sexuality on and off the field. He talked about LGBT. He made it very clear what our position is.
Mm, good.
And that this was that's what this was about.
Yeah.
He made that very clear indeed. He was pretty upbeat for somebody who has, frankly, had, as Queen Elizabeth II called one of her years, an annus horribilis.
An annus terribilis. Oh, yeah, a terrible year in Latin, yes.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, took me a second there, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. He has had not a terrific year, really.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's been a terrible, terrible year. I think it's been a tough year.
Yeah.
But he's optimistic.
Bill Clinton had worse. Let's put it
yes.
like that.
He had some bad ones.
Yes, there you go.
So he was upbeat, and, who wouldn't be? He's about to hop on a plane to Hawaii.
Mm. Nice. That foreign country where he was born.
Yes, the foreign country. Not quite as far as the other foreign country, but it's foreign enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. And, of course, there are the usual stories about how much it's costing because, it's okay to be from New Jersey if you're a president, but if you're from somewhere very far away and you want to travel there, that's not okay.
Right.
Because
right.
it costs too much.
Like Texas. Ted Cruz,
that might
Reagan,
be.
California.
Yeah, well, that was different then.
Yeah.
It was different then.
Right.
Christmas story for you. Representative Doug Lamborn, Republican, Colorado, and 36 other members of the House have proposed a resolution that defends the symbols and traditions of Christmas
So this is now the official involvement of state with church?
Yes. There's a two-page resolution, House Res 448, saying the First Amendment of the Constitution guaranteeing freedom of religion was never meant to prohibit any mention of religion or reference to God in civic dialogue. It says the House recognizes the importance of the symbols and traditions of Christmas and that it strongly disapproves of attempts to ban references to Christmas.
Okay. This just seems like more of the pandering, basically, to the fundy right.
Yes, I just felt it was a Christmas story that you ought to know about.
Okay.
And I was concerned it might raise your blood pressure.
Yeah, I've reached the point now where I just kind of smile and go, okay, these guys know how to hustle. You know, they know how to get. This is how the Republican Party, which is all about cutting people's wages, cutting people's benefits, moving money from the middle and the bottom up to the top. This is how they get people to vote for them, is by, you know, little tricks like this, talking about religion.
It's perhaps effective.
It is, yes.
A new poll for USA Today, a large majority say they've seen the impact of global warming. About 71% of U.S. adults say they see the effects of global warming.
Wow.
Yeah, 71.
That's extraordinary.
3 in 5 say global warming is serious and want the U.S. to do something about it.
That is great. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, happy holidays.
And to you and yours.
Thank you. And I'll send you some more kitten pictures.
Yes.
We'll talk again next year.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. EdisonFactor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And as promised, the third hour of our program today, instead of the first hour, is going to be Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders, the guy I think of as America's senator, although the good citizens of Vermont, I was one for a decade, know that he's their senator, and they're very pleased about it. On the line with us, Bernie will be taking your calls on the topic of your choice in just a few minutes. But first, Senator Sanders, happy holidays.
Good. Happy holidays to you and to all of the listeners. Sorry I couldn't be with you at 3 o'clock, but I absolutely wanted to get out of Washington, D.C., and I'm in the airport in Burlington, Vermont now, and nice to be with you.
Yeah, said like a man who sounds like he really did want to.
I really want to get out of Washington, D.C.
Do you have a vote at 4 o'clock this morning? Do I have that right?
No, I mean, the way the world works in the U.S. Senate is we thought we were going to have votes at 11 o'clock and then at 4 o'clock in the morning, but somewhere before then some agreement was reached, and we did a couple of votes last night late, and then we did 4 votes this morning at 10-ish.
Ah, okay. So it's a little more civil anyway. So you've got a lot on your plate right now.
There's a lot that is going on, and I do want to start off with what these votes and all this stuff is about. As I think many listeners will remember, last month Harry Reid and the Democratic Caucus, of which I'm a part as an independent, made a decision that they weren't going to tolerate the kind of Republican obstructionism that we've been seeing year after year after year. And what we focus on right now, at least, is dealing with presidential nominations for the executive branch and for the judiciary. And the Republicans have made it virtually impossible for the president to put together his team in just the way that has never been done before. So we finally changed the rules and said, sorry, if you guys are going to obstruct, you're not going to have 60. It will not require 60 votes to pass these nominations. We'll do it with 51 votes, and we've been kind of moving very quickly on a whole bunch of nominations, including the D.C. Court of Appeals, which is the second most important court in the country. So Republicans continue to fight back, but that's why I was on the floor last night at 11 o'clock voting on these issues and why we feared we'd have to be on the floor at 4:30 in the morning, but it turned out that wasn't the case. So we are making some progress, but the bigger issue is whether we, in the face of this never-ending obstructionism, whether we move to majority vote for legislation, and that is my view. I think we should. Not everybody agrees with me. But I think when you have the Republicans filibustering and demanding 60 votes on everything, we just had a non-controversial bill that was my bill that came from the Veterans Committee, of which I chair, supported in a bipartisan way, came out of the committee unanimously, supported by the veterans organizations, supported everybody. One guy got up and objected. And I couldn't get that bill passed. We will eventually, but it just slowed it up, for weeks and weeks and weeks. So, you know, the question is, given the reality that the Republicans have essentially changed the way the Senate does business, should we move to 51 votes for legislation? I think we should, but we'll see what happens on that. In any case, Tom, some of the major issues out there, I think as many listeners know, is this whole business with the NSA. We had a very good ruling from a judge, Richard Leon, this week, basically saying what many of us have been saying, that this massive collection of data, especially phone calls made by almost every American, the NSA now keeps tabs on who you called, when you called, where you called from, the NSA getting into people's emails, getting into people's knowing the site, websites, that people are visiting, tapping the phones of foreign leaders. This is, to my mind, an agency absolutely out of control, and we need some very strong legislation to rein them in. So I think we had good news from the district court judge. We had good news, in a sense, some good news from the president's own advisory committee, who he asked to comment on that and also made some reforms. Don't go as far as I would, but it's a step forward. So I think we're gaining a little bit of momentum in understanding that, yes, terrorism is a serious issue. Yes, we have got to protect the American people, but we have got to do that in a way that is constitutional and protects the civil liberties and the privacy rights of the American people. So that's a big issue that's out there. Mm-hmm. Second issue out there is just last night, no, it was this morning, actually, coming to think of it, I voted against the defense budget bill. That's the Department of Defense authorization bill. And I did that for a number of reasons. The bill is very, very large. It's about $625 billion. That is the largest single budget of the United States government. And it turns out that we are spending almost as much as the rest of the world combined in terms of defense. And at a time when we have millions of people unemployed and underemployed, we have 40-some-odd million people have no health insurance, kids can't afford to go to college. Some of my Republican colleagues want to cut food stamps, they want to cut long-term unemployment benefits, et cetera, et cetera. I think we should not be spending that much money on defense. I think also there's no question that there's just an enormous amount of waste. There's fraud. Virtually every major defense contractor has been found guilty of fraud or has had reached some kind of settlement with the Department of Defense. So I think we can maintain a very, very strong defense, which I certainly support, but do it in a way that is not quite as expensive as the current budget. Also, I should point out that some of the money going to the intelligence agencies, including the NSA, is in that budget as well, and I think we might want to look at cutting some funding for the NSA. When we return, I hope very much, and I think, that the Democratic leadership are going to be focusing on very important economic issues. At the top of the list, I think, will be the need to raise the minimum wage. Right now, nationally, the minimum wage is about $7.25 an hour, which is, to my mind, a starvation wage. If we raise the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, which is what the legislation calls for, it will provide a wage increase for about 30 million Americans. And I know some of my Republican friends say, well, all of these people who work for low wages are kids, they're teenagers. That is absolutely not the case. The overwhelming majority of the people who earn less than $10.10 an hour are adults and people who are really struggling economically. So when we come back, we want to raise the minimum wage. I believe very strongly we need a major jobs bill. Yes, the good news is unemployment is going down, but real unemployment is not the official unemployment rate of 7%. It's real unemployment is somewhere around 13%. Youth unemployment is 20%, and I think that's an issue we have to deal with by creating jobs. And I would argue that the fastest way to do that is to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. That's our roads and our bridges and our wastewater plants and our water plants. I'm sitting in an airport right now. We need good rebuilding a whole lot of airports and improving our air system as well. So there's a lot of work to be done. We can put a lot of people back to work pretty quickly by doing that. Lastly, I would say that one of the interesting developments of the week is that the Department of Education, Arne Duncan's group, released $280 million for preschool education. And Vermont got a good part of that. We got some $37 million, which is very much needed. But we have got to, as a nation, focus significantly not only on education in general, but on preschool education. It is a disaster from one end of this country to the other. Working families are in desperate need of good quality, affordable childcare. Care. Just talking to a young man who works with me. He has two kids, or, you know, one kid in their preschool. It's over $10,000 a year. Next year he'll be paying
$12,000. Wow.
So if you're not making a lot of money, most people can't afford $12,000. So we have got to understand this, that when we talk about education, we are talking about zero or as well. Kids deserve a good spot. We've got to adequately fund preschool education.
There you go. We'll be back with Senator Sanders in just a moment.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Get your questions ready. It's Brunch with Bernie. Bernie will be taking your calls right after this. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. Welcome back. Bernie, pick up calls now?
Let's do it.
Okay, Paul in South Lyon, Michigan. You're on the air. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Satellite System. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Happy holidays, everyone. The president and the Democrats' policies, including the stimulus, saving GM and Chrysler, cash for clunkers, raising taxes on multimillionaires, et cetera, have created 8 million jobs and given us a solid economy. The Republicans' shutdowns and spending cuts have destroyed 4 million jobs in the last 4 years and turned that into a weak recovery. I hear some so-called progressives who never give the Democrats credit they deserve or the Republicans the blame they deserve for anything. Don't the Democrats deserve some credit for things like the Dodd-Frank bill and the Volcker Rule that were passed by Republicans?
You're making a fair point, and let me back it up. And I say this as somebody who has been critical, and I think appropriately so, of the president for not being stronger than he has been. But having said that, it bothers me that people forget where we were 5 years ago. Is the economy today in difficult straits? Of course it is. Everybody knows that. Real unemployment is at 13%. Median family income continues to decline. But let's remember where we were 5 years ago at the end of Bush's reign. We were losing 700,000 jobs a month. Now, you know, we're gaining a couple of 100,000 jobs a month. Is that enough? No. Is gaining 200,000 jobs a month a lot better than losing 700,000 jobs a month? I think most people would think so. So I think, you know, Paul's point is a good point. The stimulus package, it is much maligned, and I think people, for interesting reasons, don't understand its impact. But I can tell you that in a very desperate moment in 2009, when we were in the midst of that terrible recession, here in Vermont, we created many thousands of jobs. The money was focused exactly where it should have been focused, on infrastructure, on early childhood education, on Head Start, in a number of areas where we really needed help, and that was true all over the country. I think that stimulus package played a much greater role than people appreciate in lifting this country out of that terrible recession. So, you know, my point, my comment to Paul is, yes, Obama has done a lot of good things, and certainly we are in much better shape than where we were when he first came in. But having said that, there's a lot more that has to be done.
Yeah. Bernie, we have just about a half a minute, not enough time for a call, but how do you get that done with the Republicans in control of the House?
So I'll tell you how. You give them an offer they can't refuse by rallying the American people. And I'll tell you what we've already done, Tom. You may recall that virtually every Republican out there has said, we have got to, quote unquote, do entitlement reform. And I want everybody to understand that when they see on TV somebody talking about entitlement reform, what they're talking about is cutting, rather significantly, Social Security, Medicare, veterans programs. Now, what has happened in the last 6 months, because the American people have stood up, and I've been involved with a lot of grassroots organizations. We provided the leadership with a petition of 700,000 names. Don't cut Social Security. You know what's happening now, Tom? You ain't hearing a whole lot of people talking about cutting Social Security, are you?
You're right. You're absolutely right. That has faded into the background on both sides. Which is,
let's set up on that issue. And that's what we've got to do, issue by issue.
Yeah, that's a great response. Senator Bernie Sanders will be back in just a second answering your questions here on Brunch with Bernie from Tom Hartman. Minutes past the hour here on the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. It's a happy hour with Bernie today, I guess. And Donald in Los Angeles, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, hello. Senator Sanders, first off, I want to say thank you very much for pretty much everything you've done. I've been trying to figure out how to get a chance to talk to you since, like, 2004. It's been a while. At any rate, I had a whole bunch of things I wanted to talk about, and I actually ended up, it was
going too long, Donald, but the problem is going to cut you off.
Yeah, pick one, Donald.
What's that? Oh, pick, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay, here's the thing. The big thing that I've wanted to talk to you about for so long, that the biggest thing I've been trying to get talk to somebody who can and is willing to do something about it, is this false dichotomy that we have, this choice between the Democrats and the Republicans, where people end up voting for what they see as the lesser evil. One side votes for the Republicans because they think they're less evil than the Democrats, and the other side votes for the Democrats because they think they're less evil than the Republicans, and nobody's saying they're good as far as I can see. Nobody out there is really saying they want either one. They're just saying, well, we'd rather have this one than the other. Would you be willing to help the people to learn about the idea of an anti-vote, of the idea of being able to say no directly to someone on the ballot, the way you can when you vote on a bill, for example?
I understand what I think some states may have it. They call it none of the above. And that's fine, Donald. But far more important is the need to give people candidates who they can support with pride, who are going to keep their words, who are going to stand up for the middle class and working class of this country. I mean, so that's what I think. And I think what I would say this right now, the American people are not happy. We're not a happy people. We're not happy with politics. We're not happy with corporate America. We're not happy with Wall Street. We're not happy with the media. People do not see this country working the way they would like to see it work. And I think that's the bad news. But the good news, I think, is that when you explain to people the problems out there and solutions, there is a lot more unity and coming together than one might think. I mentioned Social Security a moment ago. Here's the situation. In Washington now, you have every Republican. You got some Democrats. You had the president. You had all of these right-wing think tanks and billionaires that say, cut Social Security, cut Medicare. And then you go out to the American people, whether they are left-wing progressives or right-wing conservatives, you know what people say? No, don't cut Social Security in overwhelming numbers. Don't cut Medicare. Don't cut education. And then when people are asked, in Washington, You got our Republican friends who want to give more tax breaks to billionaires, and the people say no. The rich are getting much richer. Corporate America is doing phenomenally well. They have got to be asked to pay their fair share of taxes. So interestingly enough, when you list the issues of protecting the needs of the middle class, creating jobs, asking the wealthy and large corporations to pay their fair share, you know what? There are a lot of people all over this country who say, yeah, that's what we should do. Unfortunately, in Capitol Hill and in the Congress, you don't see too many members who are standing up for those principles because of the power of big money and the lobbyists and campaign contributions. But this country is a lot more unified on basic principles, I think, than most people perceive.
Kiss Kid in Yucca Valley, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. You know, on this discontinuation, I don't know if that's a word, of the unemployment. I'm retired, but a friend of mine, he was laid off a couple of months ago. Is this going to go back to 26 weeks? And I'm going to finish off now that it's happy hour. Have you ever heard Tom's recording of Ronald Reagan when he was a Democrat? Okay, you guys, happy holidays. Thanks for all the great work you do.
Thanks. Well, thank you,
thanks,
and happy
kid.
Holidays as well. Here's where we are with this. I voted for the budget agreement because I thought it turned out to be the lesser of two evils. What it will do is prevent another government shutdown, which really is a disaster in a dozen different ways. What it will do is provide, in all likelihood, modest increases in funding for Head Start, for the Meals on Wheels program, for the WIC program, the Women, Infant, and Children's Nutrition Program, for affordable housing, for a whole lot of areas which are in desperate need of additional funding. But where I was torn in terms of voting on this bill is that it did not include extending emergency unemployment. And that means that at the end of this year, and it will happen on December 31st, there will be over a million people who will not get the unemployment benefits that they had previously been getting. Now, what we have been assured, what the majority leader has said, that as soon as the first week that we return, this bill will be up on the floor. And the reason we should strongly support it is not only because you can't leave 1.3 million families out in the lurch with no income, but also the truth is, and what the studies indicate, is that if people do not have that money, we're going to lose something like 160,000 to 200,000 jobs because people are not going to have that money to spend in their local communities. GDP will go down by about 0.2%. So it is not only really morally repugnant to pull the plug on 1.3 million workers, it is also bad economics. So I hope very much that we can get that bill passed as soon as we come back and make it retroactive.
We just have 30 seconds, Bernie. Do you think that'll get through the House?
That's a good question, and that gets exactly to the point I mentioned a moment ago, Tom. I think if we rally the American people, we can do it. I know that in the Senate, there's at least one guy, Dean Heller of Nevada, whose state has a very high unemployment rate, who is a co-sponsor of the legislation. And whether or not we can be able to find Republicans in the House remains to be seen. But it is certainly a doable task. It can be done if we put enough pressure on the Republicans.
Time to call your member of Congress. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Sanders.Senate.gov is website. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman program. The last hour of the day today. Happy hour with Bernie. We'll be right back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz there. It's a great news site.
The Republican promises sounded pretty good in 1946. But what has happened since then, Paul? Social Security benefits have been snatched away from almost a million workers by the Gearhart Bill. Fair employment practices, which had worked so well during wartime, have been abandoned. Veterans' pleas for low-cost homes have been ignored, and many people are still living in made-over chicken coops and garages. Tax reduction bills have been passed to benefit the higher income brackets alone. The average worker saved only $1.73 a week. In the false name of economy, millions of children have been deprived of milk once provided through the federal school lunch program.
And it goes on. Senator Bernie Sanders was
a familiar voice.
Yeah, that was 1940. That was the 19. What he was campaigning for Truman and Humphrey, so that must have been the election of 48, right?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, remarkable. Anyhow, it's.
I think what's also remarkable, Tom, is you and I have talked about this. You go back to the campaign that Dwight D. Eisenhower ran in 52.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a campaign that no Republican today would even dream of.
Oh, yeah.
About the same issues.
Yeah. And when he ran for re-election in 56, his platform was that he had increased Social Security, had increased unionization.
And by the way, I was on the floor just yesterday in opposition to this bloated defense budget. And I quoted that wonderful speech that Eisenhower gave when he left office about how every dollar spent on the military is a dollar that doesn't go to working people and to children and to human needs.
Yeah, yeah, that was brilliant. Back to phone calls?
Let's do it.
Okay, Candace in Salem, West Virginia. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Nice to talk to you. And, Tom, I wish you all a happy holiday.
Thank you, Candace.
The thing
Thank
that I was
much.
Wanted to ask is how can you continue the future of growth and habitat for humans and wildlife with clean water and air and the impending disease that is going to continue on and the liability of growth in the economy? I know that's kind of a hard one to ask.
Are you talking about global warming, Candace?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Well, Candace, I think I do understand your question, and it's a good question, and it's one I think that more and more people are talking about. Generally speaking, we think about our goal in the economy is more and more economic growth. And there are a couple of problems if you look at the economy just through that lens. Number one, you can have a lot of economic growth, but most of the benefits of that growth accrue to a small number of people on top. For example, we've had modest economic growth in the last few years, not great by any means, but 95% of all new income went to the top 1%. So you can have significant economic growth. It doesn't mean that the person in the middle, working class people, middle class people, are going to benefit at all. But I think the point of your question is, in a planet now which is dealing with the great crisis of global warming and many other environmental problems, how much more growth and pollution and greenhouse gas emissions can the planet sustain? And that is a very important question that many, many people are now asking. And I think the answer is that instead of looking at just growth as the goal, we have got to look at the human condition. What do we need to provide a better life for people? And that is people need good education, they need health care, they need a healthy environment, they need secure retirement benefits. And you can do those things without just economic growth. So I think there's a lot of discussion about that, and certainly a lot of discussion about understanding that if we continue global warming at the pace we are going, this planet is going to suffer a disastrous impact in terms of floods and droughts and extreme weather disturbances. So your point is very well taken.
Mark in San Francisco, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I wanted to ask Bernie, what would the steps he would take to address income inequality, what platform would he have? Let's say he was running for president. What platform would you put out there for the American people to see on how you would address this problem?
Very good question, Mark. And I haven't let me just talk a little bit off the top of my head, but it is something actually, working on. Number one, we have to make it very clear that morally and economically the status quo is unacceptable and has to be dealt with. When you have the top 1% owning 38% of the wealth of America and the bottom 60% owning 2.3%, that just doesn't work. And when you have one family, the Walton family, owning more wealth than the bottom 40%, that doesn't work. So what you need for a start is a fair and progressive tax system. That's number one. Right now, we're losing somewhere around $100 billion every year because companies are stashing the money in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda and other tax havens. That has got to end. So we need to raise revenue in a progressive way. That means higher tax rates for upper-income people. It means ending all of these corporate loopholes. It means dealing with this estate tax, which has been riddled with loopholes benefiting the very, very wealthiest of the wealthy. If you are a billionaire and you want to leave, you know, you pass away, your family will pay a tax on that. So I think real tax reform is one area that we have to focus on. Number two, we need a massive jobs program to deal with the very high unemployment rate that we have, especially among young people. The areas that I would focus on are infrastructure, roads, bridges, water systems, wastewater plants, rail system, airports, and so forth and so on. Furthermore, dealing with the last question that Candace asked, in terms of global warming, what we can do right now is make a huge transition from fossil fuels to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. That will require a significant investment. But when you make that investment, not only do you clean up the planet, have America lead the world in helping to transform the world's energy system, but you're going to create a whole lot of jobs doing that. In my state of Vermont, when we invest in energy efficiency and we weatherize a home, people's fuel bills can go down 40, 50, 60%. They're saving money. We're not producing greenhouse gas emissions. We are creating jobs. I would do that on a massive scale. We are wasting huge amounts of energy. People are paying a lot more for fuel than they should. I think we have to be thinking hard about moving to a much more efficient energy energy-efficient transportation system. We create jobs doing that. I think in terms of education, I can remember 30, 40 years ago, there were great universities out there, University of California, City College in New York, City University in New York, State Colleges in Vermont and elsewhere, that were virtually tuition-free, and we've receded very significantly from that. So I think we have to rethink the mission of college, but we have to once again make it affordable if we're going to compete in the global economy. I would invest very heavily in preschool education. The idea that working families right now, and certainly in Vermont and all over this country, finding it almost impossible to find affordable quality early childhood education for their kids is a disaster. I would invest in that as well. So, off the top of my head, those are some of the areas that I would focus on.
Michelle, in Columbus, Ohio, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. Here in Ohio, I have a bumper sticker of yours on my car.
Oh, thank you very much, Michelle. And nobody knows what you're talking about when they see that bumper sticker, right?
I think I get honked at sometimes, and I always hope it's for the best. real quickly, redefinitions or reform. It seems to me when you're working with the minimum wage or entitlement reform, it seems to me the starting point, the federal poverty level, is set at a point that is absolutely absurd and unlivable to start with. If minimum wage has any correlation with what the federal poverty level numbers are, that seems to me maybe that's a bit of a sticking point of moving forward there. And lastly, entitlement reform. At the very least, instead of cutting Social Security recipients should be getting, at the bare minimum, what is the federal poverty level. I know many people do not receive that.
Good. Michelle, thanks very much for your comment. And thanks for the bumper sticker. And I certainly agree with everything you said. How the federal government computes what the poverty level is inadequate. What we know, Tom, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but a huge number of Americans every single day, every single week, are just struggling at the end of their week when they get their paycheck. They just don't have enough money to adequately take care of their families. And that's living in poverty, to my mind. But I think the immediate task is to raise the minimum wage. I would go higher than $10.10 an hour. I know out in the state of Washington, for example, there and in other communities around the country, Minimum wage levels are going higher than that. In Washington State, I think there was a town that voted a $15 an hour minimum wage, and that's something that is very good. So we've got to do that. In terms of Social Security, let me just say a few words, and I think I say this almost every week. Social Security is probably the most successful federal program in the modern history of America. It has gone a very long way to eliminate poverty among seniors, to help people with disabilities, to help widows and widowers with kids. And the reason that my Republican colleagues want to destroy Social Security is precisely because it has been successful. And it shows that when you have sensible government programs, they can make a difference. And we'll pick this up after.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Brunch with Bernie, or Happy Hour with Bernie, here on the Tom Hartman Program. Sanders.Senate.gov is Bernie's website. Be sure to check it out. So, Senator, you want to finish that thought?
And the other point that Michelle makes is that instead of talking about how we should cut Social Security, we should talk about how we should increase it. And that's something I've been working on for years. And I'll tell you one very simple way you do it. And that is right now how we determine what a cost of living adjustment, a COLA, is to my mind faulty in terms of the needs and purchasing practices of seniors. We underestimate how much seniors are spending. Seniors, by and large, are not buying laptop computers or iPhones. What they're buying are prescription drugs, health care. In cold states like Vermont, they're trying to heat themselves. And what they are spending their money on is going up a lot faster than general inflation. So we have legislation in that would create a separate index in terms of how you calculate the cost of living for seniors, which would mean an increase in Social Security.
Okay. Peter in Voorheesville, New York, watching on Free Speech TV. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator Sanders, thank you. My question is taxation our best Democratic weapon against greed? What I see right now is a cut in the government's money or job, as well as the American worker's job, and that's a recipe for disaster. And I see taxation as both Democrat and Republican. It promotes the common good by helping people, by funding food stamps, extension of unemployment insurance, and Medicare. By preserving trust in government institutions and New Deal programs, to sum it up, I want Roosevelt policies again. I'm tired of Hoover economics promoted by some Democrats and all Republicans. And Roosevelt proved a job is the best welfare. If you don't want to fund welfare, stop sending the jobs overseas. Thank you very much, Senator Sanders.
Well, Peter, thank you for your, I think, your appropriate statement. I agree with you. And, you know, I had the pleasure a few years ago of being in the Oval Office not long after President Obama was elected, and that's kind of what I said to him. I said, given the crises that we face right now, the American people need to understand the role that Wall Street and big money have played in destroying our economy, and they need some strong programs to create the millions and millions of jobs that have to be created. I think President Obama has not chosen that path. But I do think that what we need is a series of programs to put our people back to work. I believe that we need, as I mentioned a moment ago, real tax reform, which says to the people on top whose incomes, the top 1%, whose incomes are growing phenomenally in recent years, and this is the disgrace of our economy, in recent years we've had a huge increase in the number of millionaires and billionaires, while at the same time today we have more people living in poverty than at any time in the history of America, and our childhood poverty rate is the highest in the industrialized world. That just is wrong and cannot be allowed to continue. So I think the point, Peter's point is, you know, what taxation is about is the dues you pay living in a civilized society. And you know what? People who are making hundreds of millions of dollars and making billions of dollars, one out of four corporations that are paying nothing in federal income taxes, guess what? They have got to ante up. They're part of America. They have to help us create the kind of country we know that we can become. So I think Peter's point is well stated.
It's Senator Bernie Sanders here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of your calls for Bernie right after this. Check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. And when we come back in just a second from this break, I'll be doing my Friday afternoon thank yous. We always do these at the very last break of the last day of the week. Right after the thank yous, more Bernie's calls. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, our associate producers, Shane Farner and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, our writer-researchers, Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldberg for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, all of the companies that syndicate our program, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius, XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio Network, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show independently, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, and the others around the country, the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, to Alan Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, Jay Tamboli for our tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you, and a special thanks to Senator Bernie Sanders for being on this program all these years. Bernie, thanks so much.
Well, Tom, and let me just wish you and all of the listeners a very, very happy holiday season.
Thank you. Very, very kind of you. So let's get back to the phone lines, okay?
Okay.
All righty. Let's see. Tom in Kalkaska, Michigan. I've been to Kalkaska. Hey, Tom, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. Senator, I'd like to know how we could change the free trade into a fair trade, and I think that would help a whole lot.
Tom, thanks very much for that question, and I think you're exactly right. The American people, from both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, Republican and Democratic presidents, have been, in my view, been given a bill of goods, a whole lot of false information about trade policies. And as many listeners understand, that trade agreements like NAFTA and CAFTA and permanent normal trade relations with China and other trade agreements were strongly supported by corporate America and all of the big money interests. And their reasoning for that is not hard to understand. Why would you want to pay an American worker $15 or $20 an hour, have to negotiate with unions, have to pay your fair share of taxes, have to protect the environment, when you could go to China and go to other countries and pay people, you know, pennies an hour, not have to deal with unions and so forth and so on? And that's what they did. So we had these unfettered free trade agreements, which resulted in the shutdown of many, many factories throughout this country, the loss of probably millions of decent-paying jobs. Companies go abroad, then they bring their products back in this country. So the result is you go to a store now, go to a department store, people are doing a lot of shopping now, Christmas time. Look at where the products come from. I was just in a shop the other day with my wife doing some Christmas shopping for our grandchildren. And we were looking at some Disney stuffed animals. And, Tom, you know where they were made? I thought, well, they're probably going to be made in China. No, they're made in Vietnam.
No, it's cheaper.
Cheaper in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And when it gets, you know, too expensive in Vietnam, they'll probably move to North Korea. You know, so that's the pattern. And I think Tom asked the caller asked the right question. And what we need is a trade policy that protects American workers, and not just corporate interest. And that means, you cannot simply shut down in America, move abroad, and then think you're going to bring your products back to this country tariff-free. Demands have got to be made on corporate America to reinvest in this country and create the kinds of jobs that we desperately need.
Dwayne in Petaluma, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Tom and Bernie. Coming up on the 100th anniversary of the Fed, I was, and considering that both from the left and the right, there appears to be demonstrations coming on Monday on the Fed. What solutions would you advise on from the left for fixing the Federal Reserve so that it gives the money to the people instead of big corporations, that it gives the money to maintain their houses to those who were caught in this trap, instead of giving it to speculators to buy up those houses? What can be done?
Well, this is an issue my office has been heavily involved in, and I'm proud to say that during the Dodd-Frank legislation, we got the first ever audit of the Fed, and that was during the financial crisis. And that audit was really unbelievably revelatory in the sense that we learned, and would not have learned if we hadn't passed that amendment, that the Fed lent out during that crisis $16 trillion in a revolving loan approach to every major financial institution in this country and central banks all over the world, as well as many wealthy many corporations in America, and including wealthy individuals. So there's a lot to be learned. This is what I do think. I think short term, we have legislation in that actually I thought may have actually come up last night. We want to get it up. It's a modest reform of the Fed. Right now, the Board of Governors of the Fed, Federal Reserve, are appointed by the President with the approval of the Senate. What I want to see is instead of, in terms of the regional Feds, which right now have 9 members, 6 of which, whether it's the New York Fed or the Kansas City Fed or whatever it may be, they come from the banking committee. 3 are bankers themselves and 3 are appointed by, bankers. So 6 out of 9 come from the banking community. We want to change that, get bankers off of the Fed, have people who sit on the regional Feds come from the communities, from unions, from environmental groups, rather than be dominated by the banking interests. That's a short-term approach. Longer-term, obviously, we have to change the priorities of the Fed. And the Fed has got to focus on creating jobs in this country. In my view, the Fed has got to end the usury, which now exists in these banks that are charging people 20, 25% interest rates on their credit cards. That's a very important mission. And as the caller indicated, the Fed has got to help us get money out to small businesses, get money out into the communities to help us create jobs. So the goal of, as the caller indicated, is to have the Fed work for ordinary people rather than just Wall Street.
So Senator Sanders, Bernie, thanks so much for being with us, and Happy New Year.
And to you as well.
And Happy Holidays to you. Thank you. We'll be, don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, and all of you listening and supporting our programs, thank you so much. We couldn't do it without you. Wishing the happiest of holidays from all of us here at the Tom Hartman Program. Tag your it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. EdisonFactor.com. Edison Factor is a supplement for the brain. More information at EdisonFactor.com. SolarWorld.com. SolarWorld has a 35-year history in the manufacturing of solar in America. More information at SolarWorld.com. Carbonite.com. Automatic online backup and file recovery. More information at Carbonite.com. AngiesList.com. Detailed reviews on roofers, plumbers, house cleaners, dentists, and more. More information at AngiesList.com. Stamps.com. Postage online from your computer. More information at Stamps.com. And our website, TomHartman.com. You support our programs, and please help by supporting the people who help make this program possible. There are links to all of our underwriters at TomHartman.com. Thank you.